Wolf Radio calling. Ghost Wolf Radio calling. This is Ghost Wolf Radio calling. And I'm back for another show, thanks to the infamous but greatly respected by us, Tom Metzger. The other night I was watching, flipping through the channels. I came upon this movie called A Few Good Men. You guys know what movie I'm talking about. And it's, written and produced by probably one of my most hated Jews, Rob Reiner. Yeah, if you guys don't know who Rob Reiner is, he's the one who played Meathead in All in the Family, the hippie son-in-law. And this movie had everything that the system likes. It had the sexist white general, played by Jack Nicholson. It had the Hispanic victim, the character named Willie Santiago. It had the black super soldier, Harold Dawson. And that's not the actor name, that's the character in the movie name. And then it had his sidekick, his partner in crime, the dumb white soldier who idolized the black soldier, Loudon Downey. Then we had the redneck, hint of a Christian identity type of Jesus freak, lieutenant, a Marine lieutenant played by Kiefer Sutherland. Then we had the pious, witty Jew lawyer sidekick of Tom Cruise's character, who went by the name Sam Weinberg. We know that's a Jew. I mean, the actor name. I mean, you know he's portraying a Jew. And then we had the strong female played by Demi Moore, Rob Reiner. I hate that guy so much. You know, and don't forget Tom Cruise played the cocky, short-cutting white lawyer who didn't really want to get his hands dirty at first. Oh, let's not forget about the very intelligent black judge. You know, this movie came out in the early 90s, and when it came out, I went to the theater to see it when I was all Christianized and dumbed down and cowardly. And it really didn't strike me then. I was really just interested in military movies then, because I just got out of the military dishonorably after 11 and a half years of service. But, you know, watching it now with fresh eyes, I mean, like I said before, racism in a way ruins you. You just don't see the world the same way anymore. That same day, I watched a little bit of MSNBC, and I saw this talking head, blonde-haired, blue-eyed white lady on MSNBC by the name of Lori Wallace, a pox upon her house. She was just cursing the fact that the Colombian president, Alvaro Uribe, was being very harsh on the Afro-Colombians. I guess 25% of Colombia is black, and he was treating them with not too much kindness. And he wasn't being very nice to the indigenous Indian type of people in Colombia. So President Alvaro Uribe, cheers to you, brother. Keep up the good work. And Lori Wallace, well, I hope a lot of things happen to you. I want to clarify something. I talked the other day about the pseudonym email addresses and how when I initiate an email address account for Hotmail, Yahoo, whatever, that I do it in a certain specific location that's far from my home and far from where I work. Now, I'm not saying you got to travel 50 miles, but, you know, away from where you work and away from where you live. You know, a town that, a nearby suburb of where you live that has nothing to do with you or your family. And you initiate your account there, provided that their library does not have a real detailed surveillance system, and provided that you don't have to check in with the lady to get a temporary library card to use her computers. We don't want nothing to do with those. But I forgot to mention that when I, like I said before, I have at least three or four accounts that I do different things with. Okay. But what I don't do, remember, when I go check my emails on these sites and or my these addresses, and when I shoot someone an email for some of my activities to either get information or try to mislead people into meeting me or whatever, I do not park in that library parking lot. I don't park nowhere near that library. And when I do park my car, I make sure there's no surveillance camera. okay? So I just want to make that correction. I noticed as a delivery driver, when I worked for, as a delivery driver a couple years ago, I noticed that in industrial parks, and you guys know what an industrial park is, those of you not from this country, maybe not, maybe Google it or something. But in industrial parks, you can pretty much go into some companies, you know, you could travel to the back of, let's say, a factory or a warehouse, and look for words that say will call. And that's usually where companies go pick up, like, let's say I work for whatever company, I'm going to this establishment to pick up a part, to pick up a package or something like that. People who come to pick up things go in the will call office. And people, if this company delivers to other places, they don't have to do nothing with the will call. They'll just go right out the dock door with their delivery trucks. But a lot of times, you know, just look for this if you have a, maybe you go to apply for a job. If you see a will call office by a dispatch office, usually there's a phone on the wall, and that's meant for truckers to call their dispatch to verify if they're at the right location, if they're dropping off the right material, where they need to go to next. Look for that telephone. Because what I've done with telephones like that, when I was making deliveries, and when Tom Metzger's operation was out in Fallbrook, California, I would go up there, you know, I would do what I got to do with the clerk, with the lady, with the guy in the warehouse or whatever, you know, at the counter. I say, hey, I need to use your phone. I need to call my my dispatcher. I need to find out what's going on and see if I'm here for the right part or not. She said, sure, go ahead. So I would go up to the phone, and I would dial that number out in California that Tom Metzger had, the airing update line out in Fallbrook, and I would just be standing there just listening to the latest airing update. And, you know, when the guy would come back to the counter to maybe do something with some paperwork, and I would point at the phone, I'm like, they got me on freaking hold again. Ain't this the shit, you know. And that's very characteristic of most truck drivers or delivery drivers who go into a dispatch area of an establishment to call their dispatch to find out some bit of information. So look for that. Look for a phone, because that phone has nothing to do with you. And if you needed to use a phone like that, what would you do as rule number one? You would dress in uncharacteristic, nondescript clothing. And you would never be looking right up at the corners of the room. Just go in there, keep your head down, but walk normally, and just don't give any direct facial shots to any cameras. Most cameras, 99% of all surveillance cameras are up in the corners, so they can get the whole room. Most of your banks are like that. There was one bank that had a surveillance camera at the counter where the patron would converse or do business with the bank teller, and the camera was right there at the counter facing up at the people. So, but they're trying to be surreptitious with those kind of cameras. But, you know, that's why you dress in nondescript clothing. That's why you wear uncharacteristic clothing. If you wear glasses all the time, you would get contacts. You would not let people know, not even your wife, not your kids, not your mom, dad, know that you got contacts. You would not keep those contacts anywhere in your apartment or your house where maybe a family member could find them. If people ever brought up to you the thing about contacts, you would say, oh, I can't wear contacts. They're no good for my eyes. I don't like the way they feel on my eyes. Okay? All right, I want to ask you, anyone out there, okay, any locksmiths that we have that's part of the radio network, or email Tom Metzger with this. I know I put my email address out the other day. If you want to tell me how to go about getting this, that'll be great. But what I'm looking for is a bum key, B-U-M, bum key. A bum key is a type of key that I guess a locksmith would have or somebody would have that can open up any old lock on old construction homes, homes that were built in, like, you know, the 30s and 40s. You know, I guess the locks back then were a little bit more primitive than the ones we got now. A bum key would not work, most likely, on a new construction home because the lock mechanisms have changed a lot over the years. So, how can I get a hold of a bum key? Because I tell you what, I see a lot of abandoned homes, in and around my area, and they would make great safe houses. And I don't want to break a window or whatever to, and I'm not saying it's really for me. I'm kind of using this as a first-person story, but I'm really putting it out there for you guys. An abandoned home where you can lay low at night, maybe down in the basement. You know, there may be critters down there, but you got to deal with that. Or maybe sleep upstairs. But what you don't want to do ever is flash a light in there. If a house is abandoned or unlived in, it's supposed to be dark in there at night. So don't go flashing a flashlight around in there. But I'll tell you what, it's a nice place to lay low for at least a day or two. And you only go in and out of there at night. You can go in there at night, like maybe go in there like 11 o'clock at night, you know, because maybe the next door neighbors next door most likely will be getting ready for bed. Or you could go in there maybe at 8:30 at night when it's getting dark, and whatever noises you might make would just blend in with the ambient noise of nighttime human activity, okay? So you can also do that. But abandoned homes make good safe houses, okay? I would like it if you guys were able to, you know, pick out $20, send Tom Mesker $20, and buy the book K.D. Rebel, okay? Written by David Lane. I think he wrote that while he was in prison. I'm not really sure. But it's a, you know, it's a good book. It's very entertaining. It's very white pride-ish. And gives some good info in there about certain things. But there's a concept in there that I totally agree with. And I may lose some people on this radio network for advocating this, but I don't advocate it now. But when hopefully the system will fall, but like I said the other day, there's not a guarantee that it will. But there is something in there that I did like, and that is that they went into town and basically kidnapped white women of childbearing age. They didn't bring them back to their villages or whatever and rape them. You know, they would basically re-educate them and show them, you know, how society has gone wrong and how we are sold out by our own kind. You know, so that would, I mean, in order to keep our race alive, we may need to do that against the will of some women. And I know that sounds like rape, but that's not what I mean it for. I despise all rapists. I mean, you know, maybe because most of them are black and most of the victims are white and, you know, white women are too stupid to realize that 87% of all rapists are men of color. And the white race makes up, what, 68% of the country's population, and we only make up 13% of the rapists? You'd think white women would be smart enough to realize that they are the target of most men of color rapists. Blacks being near, what, like 50%? Okay. Just a little tip there, tip here that I got off a video a long time ago, and I thought it'd be something that you should know. In case you're ever in a situation where a mad gunman is on the loose, like in a mall parking lot, and he's just shooting anyone he sees, when you see and hear the commotion, the best place to hide, and this may be general information, but I just want to cover it anyways. The best place to hide, to seek cover, is behind the engine block of any car. You don't want to hide behind the driver's door or the passenger's door or rear passenger's door, because a bullet can go right through both doors and get you. You don't want you to peek your head above the hood or the roof of the car or anything like that. What you want to do, you want to look through the windows at the guy who's doing his rampage. And you want to notice his, mark his movement at all times, because you may need to shift your position. But definitely behind the wheel well and behind the engine block of a car would be a great place to hide. You hear me scratching that off my sheet here? I thought you would like that. I want to talk about Escalina DeVord, like an 80-year-old white woman living in Knoxville, Tennessee. And, there was a company that would take ex-cons in New York, would take ex-cons out of the state down to Knoxville, Tennessee, and have them knock door-to-door trying to sell magazine prescriptions or, you know, subscriptions, you know. And you computer-savvy guys, try to find out what company that was involved because there was a shit-skinned nigger named Roger Broadway who came from New York, and he was part of this company. He was door knocking in a Knoxville neighborhood, and he broke and entered the home of Escalina DeVord, murdered her, I mean, very brutally, stole her credit cards, and this dumb shit-skin, you know, he went to the local convenience store and bought, like, a big soft drink and some donuts or whatever. So, you know, they the police flagged the credit cards, and they saw that there was activity on her credit card post-mortem or posthumously, you know, after she died. And so they went to the store, and they looked at the surveillance camera, and sure enough, it was one of these traveling salesmen. But this Forensic Files episode wouldn't give the name of the company. I think the boss or who's ever in charge of the company needs to have his feet held to the fire, not figuratively, but literally. Okay? Man, that's two black-on-white crimes that I know about in Knoxville. There's the Shannon Christian and Christopher Newsom in January of 06. Now there's that one. Jeez, white people of Knoxville, how much shit you gonna take before you decide to do something? I had this dream the other night. I dreamed that this Templar of Vulcan, a priest, a high priest of the Roman god of fire, Vulcan, was speaking to a Nordic-looking Viking type of person, telling him that the best way to set an enemy establishment on fire would be, for example, to set a fire in the south end of the establishment, opening up a window in the north end. The open window, oxygen, all fires need oxygen. The fire will burn in the direction of the source of oxygen, the open window on the north end. I wonder why I had that dream. Maybe it's for you, my friend in Sweden I talked about the other day. Think about it. Harvester of sorrow. Language of the mad. All right. I have here, I want to talk about danger areas real quick. I know it's kind of militaristic. I know it's army-ish. But a danger area is an open field, just a flat open field. It could be a road. It could be an alley. It could be a trail. If and when, and I hope this does happen, that we get to a cell structure, that we get to a militant type of action in this country, I hope our race doesn't go quietly into the night. But you want to treat all roads, open areas, like, you know, like you're in a forest preserve and all of a sudden you come across a big open area. You don't want to just cross that, even though it's nighttime, even though it could be raining out, even though it could be storming up, even if it's there's deep fog cover, okay? You only want to cross an open area if it's the last resort, meaning nothing else is better, you know? Don't forget that infrared, some police helicopters have this thing called FLIR, forward-looking infrared. And don't forget, modern troops can have infrared. And infrared will pick up your heat signature through fog, no matter how thick it is, okay? So, danger areas are roads, open areas, alleys. When you cross them, let's say you have a team of seven. You cross them, the head man gives this hand and arm signal, whatever you guys decide that to be, for a danger area. Everybody gets in a security halt. You either take a knee or you get in the prone and you face outward, like a cigar shape formation. The last two people in the formation, let's say the six and seven men, they would come forward and provide near security. Now, that leaves the number five man as rear security. So when your six and seven go forward, that means five, you become rear security. You orientate your weapon system, your sector of fire to the 6 o'clock position. Okay. Since you don't have a whole lot of men, you could do it like this. Your six and seven man, they go forward. Your six man provides near side security. That's the side that your element is on. Okay. The 7 o'clock man will go across the road and do maybe, he could do a big square-shaped recon, big, he needs to recon an area big enough to encompass your element, your seven guys, okay? So, your 7 o'clock man, or your 7 o'clock, your seven man, number seven man will go across the road, do a recon, recon an area just, I mean, big enough to encompass your element. You would come back to the far side of the danger area and signal this number six man that the coast is clear, okay? So the number one, two, three, and four would pick up, move across the danger area. When the fifth man crosses the danger area, then the sixth man, number six man, who provided the near site security, will follow right behind the number five man. And when number one, two, three, four, five, and six go past the number seven man, the number seven man will fall right back into place. Okay? I hope I wasn't confusing on that. If not, get a hold of FM7-8. Okay? But that covers like squad size and platoon size element, but I don't foresee us having, big elements like that. Okay? Since January 20th, when the white sheeple, the white sissified, wussified sheeple, was so, excited about the inauguration of Barack Obama, I want to know, I don't care if you email it. I don't care if you put it on the Arian update line, you know, news and views. You can come on and do a show with Tom Metzger and talk about it, but I want to know about all black on white crime, no matter where it is. And it can't be just a robbery. It's got to be a murder. It's got to be a carjacking and a murder, a rape and a murder. I just want to know about it because I want to do something with that kind of propaganda to show that even though we got a black president, shit is still the same. Okay? So, it's amazing how that happens. And I foresee that it will. And I want to use that in some form of propaganda. Okay? You know, I was thinking the other day, and I was thinking about how the mighty have fallen. You know? You look at some of these actors that were in movies back in the 80s, and they just seemed so prominent and so strong and forceful, you know. I think of someone like Gary Busey. He had some good roles in the 80s, and now he's on this. He's not even like a B-rated actor now, and he's like doing commentary on dumb criminals on True TV and stuff like that. And I started thinking about my old band. I was in a... what I considered a heavy metal band, outside of Joliet back in the, early 80s. Early 80s to the, mid 80s. In the mid 80s, I went in the full-time army. Okay. I was a drummer of a band called Winged Wolf. And in my mind, we were heavy metal. But, in the guitarist and the bassist mind, who were two brothers, not black, but brothers as in they came from the same mom, they were more like classic rock. They liked the blues influence of rock, you know, like Jimi Hendrix and stuff like that. And like I said, I wasn't too racially aware back then. Whatever racial instincts I had back then, I suppressed them because I thought that that was evil. It's amazing how we're deceived by the system, okay? But, I went in the army and I kind of fell out of touch with them. And, the last time I seen the guy who played bass was like over 10 years ago, at a funeral, you know, and he was still the same. And, this is like, 1995. So I was like deep into like the non-denominational church that I belong to and deep into the Jesus thing and this and that. So, I didn't fall out of that till 1998, but I regret those 6 years I gave to that. I really do. Opportunities I passed up on women, if you know what I mean. Anyways, so that's the last time I saw the guy who played bass. And I tried, you know, remaking contact with them a couple of years ago. And I always remembered the guitarist's phone number. He bought a house in Joliet, and he's working a full-time job. And talking to him... Now, when we were young in the 80s, we were in our 20s, these two guys were very Nietzsche-like in mindset, you know? Very, very virile, forceful, aggressive guys. And I'm talking to this guy who played guitar in the band that I was a drummer for, and You know, he's like a reborn Christian now. He plays guitar in his church band. And I remember them voicing racist things back in the 80s about, you know, what the niggers were doing to Joliet and how they can get welfare and food stamps, no problem. And it was hard for white people to get that. And when I heard that stuff, I'm like, oh, you got to be understanding. I mean, we're all yellow, black, and white. We're all precious in his sight, you know, the typical Christian mantra. And now, I mean, I still haven't reconnected with the basis. I don't want to now, but, you know, it's amazing how everyone I knew in the 80s, it's like they came into the world like lions, and now they're like lambs. They're going out of this life like lambs. And I look at me, and you know, if you compare it to the heavy metal that I listened to in the 80s compared to what I listen to now, you know, Judas Priest and Iron Maiden from the 80s, they're choir boys compared to Cannibal Corpse and Six Feet Under and Gorgoroth. I mean, I'm wondering, why am I different? And I really got to attribute that to becoming racially aware. And I'm sure certain things that happened in my life kind of paved the way for that, but I came into this world a lamb. And I'm telling you right now, I will leave this world a lion. I heard a phrase the other day, well, not the other day, like 6 months ago. It's called, it's better to live the life of a lion for a day than 1,000 years as a lamb, or something like that. You guys know what I'm talking about. Okay. So let me know about all this black and white crime that's going on out there post January 20th. See what we can do for that. Also, I want to add to your military knowledge when I was talking about danger areas. And when you're in a defensive position and you got your sectors of fire and you're looking downrange, if you have a lot of insect activity in front of you, like crickets making noises and stuff like that, and at night, and all of a sudden all insect activity seems to stop, somebody is approaching your area. It could be a predatory animal looking for his prey, but it could be another patrol. So always pay attention to that. If you're in a defensive position at night, or in the daytime, I mean, and all of a sudden to your front, about 200 meters, you see a flock of birds just fly out of a nest of bushes or a grove of trees. It could be a predatory animal looking for its prey, but it could be an enemy patrol. And what does that fall under? A phrase that I've said numerous times on the show before that I'll probably say numerous times again. Pay attention to detail. Okay? Pay attention to detail. Stay alert. Stay alive. Okay? I taught a show months ago about the acronym ACOCA. ACOCA comes from another phrase that you use to evaluate a upcoming military mission. Could be Ghost Wolf mission for us. And that phrase is MET-T. Okay? Mission, enemy, troops available, terrain and weather, and time. Okay? I think that's changed now. I think it's time and conditions or something like that. I think it's MET-TC or something like that. But MET-T is good enough for us. You know, what's your mission? Ambush a carload of Mexican gangbangers. Who's the enemy? It's the La Raza or 18th Street, you know, crazy Latinos, whatever they call themselves. What's the terrain and weather? It's going to be urban, or it's going to be a road that goes through a rural area between towns or wherever. You know, you got to evaluate the terrain. I cannot stress that enough. Terrain and weather. What would be the best weather condition to exploit something like that? What would it be? I've told you guys before. Inclement weather. Always take advantage of inclement weather. And then you have time. What time do you want to do this? What would be the best time? If we could do it at night, let's do it before the moon rises. What time does the moon rise? Well, the moon rises at 11:30 tonight, you know. So you got to know stuff like that. I think it'd be good to know stuff like that. But when you're making your assessment of terrain and weather, there's like another phrase that goes with that, and it's ACOCA. Observation and fields of fire, cover and concealment, obstacles, key terrain, and avenues of approach. This formula should be constantly going through your mind. If you're on the move, if you're on the patrol and the environment and the terrain is changing in front of you, you always need to play that over in your head. If I'm on the move, what are my observations and fields of fire? What would be an enemy's observations and fields of fire? How could he see me where I couldn't see him? Okay? Akoka. What would be my key terrain? If I'm on the move, I want to exploit all low ground, dried up creek beds and, out in the desert, the Mojave Desert, California, we did desert training. We look for wadis. Wadis are basically like these trenches because of land erosion and water erosion and stuff. It forms these trenches in the desert, and we used to exploit those as much as we can. It keeps you from walking on the ground. It keeps you from being seen from a long ways away. Observation, fields of fire. What are his and what are mine? Key terrain. What are his and what are mine? What are the enemies and what are mine? Observation, fields of fire. Key terrain. Obstacles. What are my obstacles? Is it a barbed wire fence? Is it a lake? Here I come. I'm moving along. Boom. I run into a big lake. I run into a big river. That's an obstacle. During my crossing an obstacle, I can start lighting up. If somebody's observing me from the other side of the river, they may not engage me. They may wait for me to be in the middle of a stream crossing or a river crossing. And if you want to know how to cross a raging river, get Ranger Handbook or some other book about that. Okay, so what are my obstacles? What would be his obstacles? How can I exploit land obstacles that would hinder him and not me? You always need to be playing this through your mind when you're on a hump, when you're on a ghost wolf mission, when you're on the prowl. It'd be a good thing. I do this all the time. It's second nature to me by now, but start making it second nature to you. Obstacles, key terrain, what would be my key terrain, what would be my enemies, and avenues of approach. And I've talked about your ghost group objective before. It could be a building, it could be someone's house, it could be an intersection where fucking niggers are selling drugs, who knows. What would be my best route to that without exposing myself to a bunch of roving police, roving enemies that are in cars, you're in a Negro neighborhood, you're white. You can look Hispanic, trust me, it's easier than you think. I've done it. So, remember about that, okay? You know what, I'm thinking about writing a Turner Diaries type of book. I always like that phrase. I sent Tom Metzger a book of violent, racist, revolutionary poetry a couple years ago, and I think he may have misplaced it, who knows. I shouldn't have overwhelmed him with all those books and all that stuff, thinking that he had time to read that. But remember, hindsight's 20/20. I thought maybe I could name it Freedom in the Realm of Madness, and how our society, in reality, has just gone fucking bonkers. It is out of its mind. 90% of the white race are out of their mind right now. And if you ever want them to follow our way, like Wyatt Kaldemer said on a update line long time ago. He said, we want our sheep back. I mean, all races have sheep in their race. They just go along with the flow. And most of the people on your Aryan Update or the radio club, you guys aren't the sheep. You guys are like the 1% of the white race that can think for themselves. They can look at a piece of propaganda coming out of Hollywood or out of the evening news and look through its lies. You guys can do that. And when you sit in the living room with your family members and you point shit out and they still don't see it because they're sheep. They're born to be sheep. So we want our sheep back. How do we set the proper example to get our sheep back? Well, when your paths cross somebody who, the type of person that was at Grant Park for when Obama did his celebration, or someone who was at the inauguration the other day and was just so happy that Obama won, when your paths cross a white person like that, man, you need to treat that person like they raped your mother. Okay? Think about writing this book. Maybe it could be called Freedom in the Realm of Madness. And my main character, Eric Blackburn, and maybe he could just start random killings in different areas, just areas far away from where he lived and where he worked. You know what I mean? He could be attacking certain institutions, banks, churches, mosques, realty companies, mortgage companies, congressional offices of, you know, whatever congressman is in Congress. Each city has a congressional office for somebody that is sent to Washington. You know, how could you make an example out of that office, you know? I'll tell you what, if we persist on allowing everything to go along, to get along, and allowing peace and safety and tranquility to go its merry way in this country and in Europe, we will disappear from this planet. There is no doubt about it. You know, the forces that be are doing their best to try to make the United States a lot like modern-day Brazil. There's so many millions of people in Brazil right now that are just racially unclassifiable. You don't know what they are. Take, for example, I mean, one of my favorite fighters, actually. I actually have a lot of respect for this guy's fighting ability, his fighting spirit, Wanderlei Silva. Yeah, his skin's white. His eyes are blue. Look at the shape of his head. Look at the shape of his jaw and his cheekbones and stuff. Very simian-looking in appearance, right? I'm telling you right now, Wanderlei Silva's got some black in the woodpile there. Recent black. And don't forget, he's related to Anderson Silva. I think Anderson Silva's his cousin. Anderson Silva's just a full-blown black. So, you know, the racially unclassifiable. And I mean, they're being, you see them in advertisements in this country. You see them in Newsweek advertisements. You see them on TV. And you look at these people, you're like, what the fuck are they? Are they Hispanic? Are they mulattoes? You don't know what they are. So, I want to talk to the ghost wolves in the great state of Florida right now. I am looking at a map of Florida. You know, if you live in Orlando, you know, I mean, to the east of you, you got Titusville, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Palm Bay. If you live in Orlando, don't do nothing in Orlando. You can go down to your southwest to Winter Haven. And if you're a ghost wolf living in Fort Lauderdale, who knows, maybe you can go to Miami to your south. Or maybe you can get on a good ride, take 75 west to Fort Myers and Cape Coral. What if you lived in Gainesville? You got Ocala, is that, to your south? Right down 75 south? Huh? If you live in Gainesville, you can go up to Jacksonville. Just jump on 24. 24, you can get on 10 going east. Jacksonville. If you're in Jacksonville, you can get on 10 going west, go all the way to Tallahassee. What kind of ghost wolf stuff can you get involved with? And I am here to tell you, and I've said it before, and I'm sure I'll say it then. Say it again. The anonymity, the aspect of nobody knowing you for miles around in a city that you may have never been there before, but you've done your homework before you left home. You know, you made many trips to Google looking at satellite photos. Maybe you contacted the Chamber of Commerce of a certain city and got a map sent to your post office box, not your house where your wife lives, or your mom and dad, or your brother and sister, or your girlfriend. You know, you guys got post office boxes, right? Yeah, I know, you got a post office box, and if it, you know, the government knows that you have a post office box, but you have to become a person of interest for that, for them to peek into that. See, that's the power of Ghost Wolf. That is the power of the Ghost Wolf. You're not on any list. You know, I mean, if you, I encourage you guys to get books from Power and Press, but you know, Tom said before that you could get on a list. You know, there's other ways of getting it. You know, maybe you can order Power and Press books through Borders. Say, hey, there's this type of book. Can you order it for me? And maybe the order form would be on, Palman's mailing list, and maybe it'd be a border. But I mean, I'm sure the feds, you know, could find that. Czar could find that. But remember, you first have to become a person of interest before any of that stuff would interest them at all. And you know who's the best person to most likely never become a person of interest? is a person who has no criminal activity or no criminal history. One of the red flags that goes up in their minds is a person who's been in trouble with the law all kinds of ways. So think about what you're up against. You're up against a system that is literally destroying your race, and you don't want to sit on your ass and just say, well, someday I will, and look how haughty and prideful the Queen Bee is. Queen Bee meaning the system, not realizing that she needs the worker bees, not vice versa. We're the worker bees. That's why the system wants to replace us with very enslavable types of people, like mestizos and Asians. You know, who do we look past in our society? Who is it that we see on the streets, and when we see them, we don't want to make eye contact with them because of, we may feel guilty, or we may feel, you know, I want to avoid this person. You know, I just don't want this person in my life. Who do we avoid? Who do we look through on the streets, in society? The homeless, you know? That is a great disguise. You get some shabby clothing. You never wash them. If you're funky in them, that's part of your ghost wolf disguise. You know, I think about the movie Batman Begins, and I've told you guys about that movie before because of the dialogue that comes out of Liam Neeson's mouth. Just, it's good fucking might is right type of stuff, you know. But there was, you know, Christian Bale's character, Bruce Wayne. He's spying on somebody who's about to hurt his girlfriend or whatever, who's like an assistant DA or whatever. And he dresses like a bum. People look right past bums. People don't pay attention to bums. The only people that pay attention to bums are police. But you got to be doing something stupid, like maybe panhandling in an area that you shouldn't be, you know? I was thinking the other day, actually I was thinking yesterday, what would be the best towns to do Ghost Wolf Ops in? I don't believe you should do anything in small towns. Small towns are, you could stand out in a small town. And in fact, if memory serves me, I think Ted Bundy got on the police radar because he did something where he attracted the attention of law enforcement in a small town. I guess he was cruising around the prowl in a small town, and he stood out. That blue Volkswagen he had just stood out, and people in the small town, the small community, like, he don't belong here. You know, if you're on your way to a city to do a ghost wolf op, by all means, stop in a small town, gas up, be cordial, be friendly, but don't be memorable. You want to be forgotten about 10 minutes later. If somebody shorts you on change, you're not going to make a big deal about it. You're just going to suck it up and drive on. Okay? I think the White Urban Survival Guide talks about that. But the best type of towns, I think, to do Ghost Wolf Ops are college towns when class is in session and GI towns. GI towns. Let me tell you something. I've lived in a lot of GI towns. And there's a lot of transient people coming and going in GI towns. College towns, too. So don't forget, college towns, they're dens of reds. So if you travel across your state line to two states over north, south, east, or west of you, and you've reconned that town, and it has a nice big college in it, man, you can blend in. Make sure you wear a sweatshirt that says Dartmouth or something on it. Make sure you look clean cut. Make sure you wear a baseball cap. If you're known for wearing a baseball cap all the time, wear a different type of hat, okay? But I can't tell you just how great you would blend in. And make sure long sleeve sweatshirt. I'm not on a 90 or 80 degree day, but that's why you don't want to get tattoos. How about a button-up shirt with it not tucked in the pants? Maybe you got a school book bag over your shoulder, stuffed with a pillow. You don't got no books in it. Remember, you want to be light. You want to be able to run. Got good running shoes on. College towns, people. And I'm sure the system will start saying, hey, how can we pick out a face in the crowd in college towns or whatever? Well, let them pick out your face because you first have to become a person of interest. Okay? I want to tell a little story here real quick. I don't know how much time I got left, but finish the following sentence for me. Those I seek to destroy, I do what? I slash their brake line? No. I punch them in the mouth, give them a fat lip? No. Those I seek to destroy, I flatter. Okay? Those I seek to destroy, I flatter. It takes a strong man to purposely look weak in the eyes of his enemy just so he can surprise him later. I worked with this guy a couple years ago. Big, fat, but very strong, physically strong, big, fat, very strong Mexican guy. And I played his buddy, you know, and I couldn't stand this freaking guy. So how did I get back in this guy? Just because he was just such a jag-off? I pretended to be his friend, and believe me, I was convincing. I always built up his ego. And I'm like, man, Jose, I wish I was as strong as you, man. Tú eres chingón. Means Spanish means, man, you're a fucking stud. And guys at work would go out drinking and stuff like that, and you know, one time this Jose guy told me, he said, like, yeah, man, I'm going on a diet. You know, I think I'm too fat. I'm going to get in better shape. I'm like, dude, don't be silly. So you're stronger than five men. Don't fucking fall for that feminine shit. You don't need to be on no diet. I talked him out of a diet. And he needed to be on one, trust me. He was strong as hell, but yeah, I noticed when we wrestle around in the shop or whatever, it was a very undisciplined place I worked at. Yeah, I used to wrestle with this guy. Here I am, this hardcore racist, horse playing around with this Mexican, wrestling with him, you know? And I would always pretend, oh, man, I get it, man. You're too fucking strong for me, man. You know, and I would just build this up over months. And finally, you know, all of us went out to drink one night. You know, I'm drinking 7-Ups because I don't drink. And I guess there was something, you know, this Jose guy went to the bar and he maybe bumped into someone. And I built it up, man. I was just like that. I was just like in his ear all night long. I'm like, man, I don't think that's fucking right, man. That guy disrespected you. It was another guy, another white guy. Nowhere near as big as him. This guy's very broad in the shoulder. He had big chest, big arms, but a big fucking belly. And all night long, remember I told you the story about how when Roman centurions, when they went out to war, when they're coming back into Rome, into the Colosseums, and everyone's cheering their name, and the Roman centurion, the Roman general, would have a slave riding up in the chariot with him, whispering constantly in his ear, glorious fleeting, glorious fleeting. Over and over again, the slave would whisper in the Roman centurion's ear while the crowd's cheering his name, because the Roman guy always wants to, you know, keep in touch with reality. Yeah, they love me today, but they can hate me tomorrow. Glory is fleeting. And I told you about my bandmates, how the strong, how the mighty have fallen. Don't let age do that to you. But I was in this guy's ear all night long. I'm like, Jose, you're a fucking stud, man. You're the toughest guy in our fucking shop. And this guy's over at the next table, you know, kind of looking at this Jose guy. A couple times they made eye contact. And I just built this Jose guy up all fucking night, at least over a 2.5-hour period, talking about this guy, just praising him, you know, not overdoing it too much now, but still doing it, trying to, you know, be a good friend to him, not too much like a kiss ass. One thing came to another out in the parking lot at night, you know, and I had him built up, man. I had him ready to go. And, you know, Mexicans are very easy to do that to. They're not really the brightest people. So something happened. They fucking went at it, man. You know, this white guy who was nowhere near as big, nowhere near as strong, I thought was going to, at first I'm like, oh, man, what did I do with my fellow white man? What I ended up doing, I ended up making him stronger. So they went at it. And at first, you know, they kind of dominated, because all you do is just lay on the guy, you know. He gassed out, man. Gassed out at like the 90-second mark, and this white guy just beat the fucking shit out of him. He just destroyed him, man. This was about 2.5 years ago when I was working for a certain establishment. Just destroyed him. And the kind of all the people gathered around, and no one called the cops. They just let him fight it out, man. And finally, you know, a couple of white guys pulled this white guy off of, you know, my coworker Jose. Fucked him up, man. That was a Friday night. Jose didn't show up for work Monday morning. Didn't show up for work Tuesday morning. Finally, he called into work Wednesday, said he quit. Came in that following Friday, got his check. We never saw him again. Those I seek to destroy, I flatter. You know, I had a conversation with a young NSM guy a few months ago. Young racialist. Only been in the movement for maybe about a year. And I'm just trying to, I'm sitting in the back of this car going somewhere with a couple other guys, a couple other racially minded people. Sometimes I'll hang out with them. And I do that for a simple fact that I want to inject them with some ideas. You know? I'm already a marked man here in Chicago. You know, I told you guys before, if I do anything, I'm not going to do it in Chicago. You know, I'll cross state lines, go someplace else, okay? So, and I don't care if I'm followed, you know, I mean, they can waste all the resources they want, because they're following me, they're not following somebody who really is a threat. But anyways, I'm talking to this young racialist, and I'm trying to tell him, you know, how to go about doing something. And, you know, a lot of times I couldn't even finish a sentence without him butting in and being very opinionated. Not too disrespectfully, but I could tell he wasn't listening to me. You know how much of how many people are in NSM and Vinlanders and Klan that are like that? They just won't fucking listen. They think they know it all. They're right. They, you know, they fucking read Mein Kampf, and now they think that they know all they need to know. And the one thing that is killing off a good deal of the struggle is ego. Everybody wants to be the next fucking Hitler, Jeff Scoop. Everybody wants to be the new guy to get all the media attention. Nobody wants to be the fucking Indian anymore. Nobody wants to fucking listen and take good advice. Fucking Metzger's been talking to his blue in the face for years now. Leaderless resistance, and how many of the struggle are paying attention? I fucking write you off. You're gone to me. You won't listen? You insist on playing this stupid-ass fucking games? Who are we? Who are we? We are descendants of noble nations. Descendants of Celts, Highlanders, Saxons, Teutons, I mean, fucking Franks, Vandals, Visigoths. Who are we? We are the descendants of Picts, P-I-C-T-S, for plural. Picts. You know who the Picts were? I don't know what Roman Caesar it was that sent the whole legion of Roman soldiers north of Hadrian's Wall, and I think Hadrian's Wall is right on the Scottish border. You brothers in Britain will be able to, you know, correct me on that if I'm wrong. Sent the whole legion north of Hadrian's Wall. They were never seen or heard from ever again, not one. They never found a shield. They never found a helmet or a sword or a sandal. It's like the ground just came up. They came alive and just fucking swallowed them up. The Picts did that. They used to paint themselves blue. They take some kind of plant and get some blue kind of ointment on them and paint their bodies with the paint war designs on their face. The Picts. We are descendants of those people. Who are we? We are descendants of noble nations. And you don't want to fucking listen? You think you know it all? Ego is killing off a great deal of our struggle. Makes me mad. The Picts, very interesting. Painted themselves blue. I think like the Celts, they ran into battle naked. Maybe some of you historians can correct me on that. The Picts, north of Hadrian's Wall. Reminds me. Reminds me how I'd like things to turn in this country. North of the border separating Mexico from the United States. How I wish the ground would just come alive and just swallow black, brown, and yellow. We're a joke to them. We are. And I know you guys don't like to hear that, but you need to be in touch with reality. Okay? I wish the ground would just come alive and just swallow them. Jews, too. Come dwell in me, wild dog. May I earn my name in sweeping fog. I must become a man of war. A whipping dog I be no more. Ghost, wolf, I work by firelight. Ghost Wolf, I steal through the night. Ghost Wolf, what's my body count? Ghost Wolf, my future's in doubt. Ruthless, my barbarity. Robert J. Matthews is alive in me. When I light a fuse, I feel control. No warning from me, no fire in the hole! Ghost Wolf, strike the fatal blow. Ghost Wolf will make the cities glow. Ghost Wolf will launch the attack. Ghost Wolf will bring the Stone Age back. There's fire in the minds of betrayed men. It does not matter how our lives end. But when it does end, may it tell the story of how we went out in a blaze of glory. Ghost Wolf, destroy the government. Ghost Wolf, make a new covenant. Ghost Wolf, one based on race. Ghost Wolf, for our own living space. A terrible vengeance someday will seize the day. The system weeps from the dirge we play. When the white man's wrath is then descending, the blood of nigger spits and Jews will be never ending. I think that's supposed to be when the white man's wrath is then descending, the blood of niggers will be never ending. Come on, Ghost Wolves. Get hot. Remember who you are. Remember who we are. We are descendants of noble nations. We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. Carpe Noctem. If you have not starved the sheep by now, then maybe you don't belong. Starved sheep, feed the 14.
Thank you, Guerrilla Radio Man. Yes, that was great. Good speech. How about that, boys? What do you think? Well, encourage everybody to that's worthy to subscribe to this radio program. I think you'll admit it's a program that's, you just don't hear this much heavy-duty hard stuff from almost any place else. So, spread the word. And record the show and play it for your friends. And also remember, you can go back, can go up to resist.com into our archives and get shows from way, way back. We got a lot of other older shows we're going to play too that we made in California. So, okay, that's it for today. We'll see you tomorrow. And just remember, 14 words and 5 words. Yeah.